Hello, and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Heil Russell.
And I'm Steve from Off of Rare Gamer.
Steve from Off of Rare Gamer. And if Steve from Off of Rare Gamer is on The Conversation, it can only mean one of two things. We're either talking about the Rare Cow, and we're not. We're not doing that. Or Steve is popping the McCorkle off another bottle of bubbly Stop and Swap Chat. And good God, Steve. Okay, so let's recap for those who don't remember. Because this is now the fourth episode we have done on the topic of Stop and Swap. And we will recap even further than just recapping what we've already discussed. We will go into the trenches here and actually get down and dirty with what Stop and Swap is, just as a refresher course, and how it applies to Banjo-Kazooie, Donkey Kong 64, and myriad Rare titles from the late 90s and the early aughts, or what was supposed to be the early aughts if Rare, and specifically Paul Makacek from Rare, had their way. But this is the fourth now. We've done a Stop and Swap episode, not once per season, but we did one back in season 8 called Stop and Swap, A History, which really just delved into what we know about Stop and Swap, or knew at that point in time. That was then followed up in season 9, I believe, with Stop and Swap, A Revelation, which was a quick follow-up, a relatively fast turnaround, because we had opened up new information after doing that first Stop and Swap episode. Then, last season of The Conversation, season 11, we came back, reconvened, for Stop and Swap, A Summation. And while I would recommend listening to all three of those episodes before listening to this one, it's not necessary. You don't need to. We'll catch you up right now. So, Steve.
Yeah.
In 50 words or less, explain everything we discussed on those three episodes. Go.
Oh, boy. Okay, so to get everybody caught up to speed with what Stop and Swap was, Rare had this ingenious idea where they said, look, we have cartridges on the N64. We're going to use cartridge swapping. So you're going to take a cartridge out after turning off the power, and by switching in a new cartridge and turning it on, those two can communicate using the RAM and memory, and then we can unlock secret features in either game. Now, in the first episode, we knew that Stop and Swap was canceled, but we didn't know how that all came about. Paul Makacek came out in the second episode saying, hey, here's a fax I have of Nintendo telling us not to do this anymore. So that's where that comes into play, and that's the second episode that we reflected on. And that was during Donkey Kong 64 as well, in case you're wondering where it fits into the whole grand scheme of things. So it was 1998, they planned Stop and Swap to be a thing. 1999, it was canceled. And then unfortunately, the Banjo-Tooie team and the Donkey Kong team scrambled after that to try and fix everything up for 2000. And then it was 2001 that the codes and everything to make it live again, at least in one game, was found. So that's kind of what you'll get in the first and second episode. The third episode was just a reflection on things that we've found since then, like the Stop and Swap mechanism. So that's how it's meant to activate in Banjo-Kazooie. And I actually found the Golden Donkey Kong statue, a little trophy for my efforts, in the German version of the Donkey Kong 64 strategy guide. So we now know that that's one of the items intended for Stop and Swap that we didn't know before. Before that, it was just eggs and keys. So that should succinctly sum up everything within those three episodes. If you found any of that interesting and you go, oh, I want to hear more about that, go to each of those episodes I've described.
Well, Steve, that was very succinct, but unfortunately, it was under 50 words, so I'm afraid we're going to have to disqualify you and bring in another host.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Most people are aware of at least the three big ticket items from Banjo-Kazooie. So Banjo-Kazooie ends. Mumbo Jumbo comes down from the palm trees on the beach and says, "Hey, I have some saucy Polaroids for you to look at." You know, like perverts do. Or at least perverts back then, you know, back before you could just put it all online. So it's two mystery eggs. I call them the question mark eggs. The pink egg in Treasure Trove Cove's Shark Food Island. The blue egg in Gobi's Valley, behind the door in the cliffside. And then, of course, the ice key in Freeze Easy Peak in Waz's Cave, which is the only one you can actually see during gameplay. You can see it behind the ice in the cave. And this promise that you would be able to go back and unlock these with the release of the sequel, Banjo-Tooie, which was promised at the end of Banjo-Kazooie back in the summer of 1998. It basically just created this frenzy within the fandom. It was the earliest example I can remember of a game extending its life through, well, it wasn't even conspiracy theory or urban legends. It was basically the developers putting that in there themselves and going, yeah, this is real. You'll be able to get these in the game, but you won't be able to until the sequel comes out. However long that is. And, you know, we didn't wait. I mean, I beat Banjo-Kazooie, and then me and my friend, we spent several weeks desperately trying to solve the mystery ourselves, thinking there was a way to do it in the game. And, of course, it spawned all sorts of ridiculous notions. Like, we were scouring old pre-release magazines with screenshots, trying to decipher things that slipped through the cracks. Like, hey, you know, Nintendo Power mentioned something about Mount Fire Eyes, which was a world and was them mishearing what Rare was telling them. Because I think the world was supposed to be Mount Fire Ice, i.e. what Hailfire Peaks eventually wound up as in Banjo-Tooie. But Mount Fire Eyes was what Nintendo Power printed, and I mean, that's an evocative name unto itself, even it makes far less sense. So you think, oh, you know, a secret lava world? I mean, Gobi mentions he's off to the lava world, and then there's a lava chamber with a lot of empty space in Grunty's lair. So what if the ice key unlocks a secret world in Banjo-Kazooie that's accessed in that chamber, where the entrance, like, rises up from the lava? We were just going off that, you know, riffing. So between that and mentions of Hammerhead Beach, which is probably just an early name for Treasure Trove Cove, and Fungus Forest also being mentioned, we thought there could even be up to three secret worlds. And this was 98, you know, and going into 99. This was our world. But what we didn't know was that Donkey Kong 64, which was Rare's big game for November 1999, was also going to utilize Stop and Swap. And as you discovered, Steve, this information had been out there, but nobody really put the pieces together. In the German player's guide for Donkey Kong 64, they had left behind a little illustration of what the Stop and Swap item exclusive for Donkey Kong 64 was going to be. So if you hot swapped effectively Donkey Kong 64.
Cold swap. You got it. Yeah, Paul is very, and I can see why he's so hurt about this, because even the video that we're going to describe does hot swapping, and he's going, no, you know, because that's why Nintendo said no, ultimately, is they saw hot swapping and went, no, that's going to burn everything. So it is cold swapping. You have to turn it off first and power cycle.
Well, it would melt the ice key, so it does make sense.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, you could cold swap, which doesn't sound as dangerous and sexy. When you're cold swapping.
Well, it was the dangerousness that Nintendo really didn't like.
Right, but Rare always lived on the edge, and that's why we were fans of them. I mean, it was the 90s, you know? You had to go extreme. Like I've said before, you had to chug Mountain Dew while jumping out of an airplane on a surfboard, or else you just weren't living your life to its fullest. But yeah, we were supposed to have Donkey Kong 64 as part of this process. Which, you know, this wasn't advertised in Banjo-Kazooie. That game just promised something to do in Banjo-Tooie. So Donkey Kong 64, you're going to, like, yank out the cartridge and then put in the Banjo-Kazooie cartridge back into your N64, and it was going to enable you to take the ice key from Waz's cave, bring it into Donkey Kong 64. And we think there is Crystal Caves. There is a room in Crystal Caves that you could have used the ice key for, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
It's right near the entrance. You walk forward. It's that one room that has the chunky pad in it that looks weird because you walk toward a wall and all of a sudden the camera does this weird, you know, swing across the room to go, look at this. And you go, it's a wall. You know?
So pre-release screenshots of Donkey Kong 64 show off a Banjo-Kazooie. Well, it's been called a freezer. It's been called a shower.
Yeah. You've called it the TARDIS.
Yeah, there's a Banjo-Kazooie chamber in Donkey Kong's treehouse. And they replaced it in the final build with something like just piles of coal and I think TNT. Yeah, so it's not there in the final game. But we think, well, you, Steve, you shared this GIF of the animation that's left in the game of the treehouse cutting from the camera swinging and zooming in on where the freezer would have been, and then immediately fading to Crystal Caves.
Yeah. And yeah. It's a glitch that you can actually enable in the early game if you do something called intro cutscene.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to start the introductory cutscene in the mystery menu, and you start playing it and you exit as soon as it starts, you basically confuse the game where the game thinks it's playing the cutscene, but you're actually playing the normal game. And if you do that correctly and wait for a specific time between fade-outs, so basically you set a timer for like 2 minutes and 35 seconds, if you die in the treehouse, basically going into the gap there, you will cause that cutscene to begin, and then it will warp you to Crystal Cave. So that that action still exists in the final game. Like, they tried to hide it, and it's very easy to actually have it, you know, come alive again.
Yeah. So, whatever the ice key would have unlocked in Donkey Kong 64, we're not completely sure in Crystal Caves itself. But what you discovered, Steve, is there is another stop and swap item that Donkey Kong 64 would have contributed to this madness beyond what just Banjo-Kazooie had to offer up, which we know about the ice key. And more than just the two eggs advertised in the game, there were also other eggs hidden throughout the game, which of course we found out about really early on when the codes were unleashed, like late in the N64's life.
Yeah, so just to touch up on that real quick, so Rare had promised us three items, the two eggs and the key, and when Banjo-Tooie came out, there was no connection to be found, but they did offer those items in the second game as, you know, much as they could do, because they're like, well, we can't promise a connection, but we can give them the items that they can use as the reward. So it should have died there, really, if we weren't so snooping. But some clever people, some data miners, decided to go into Banjo-Kazooie because they knew the eggs were there and say, you know, let's see if we can try and discover these links here. And they found out that there's six total eggs and the key. So there's seven items altogether. Mm-hmm. So double what we were promised initially. Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember, because I was very invested, I believed in the notion, the idea that, no, there has to be a real way to go back. Okay, they put the two eggs in Banjo-Tooie and the ice key inside Banjo-Kazooie cartridges with googly eyes in not really hidden areas. They're pretty just out in the open, all things considered, given the magnitude of what these items are and what they meant to Banjo-Kazooie and Rare and DKU fans for the better part of 2 years, over 2 years at that point. And, you know, of course, we had, like a little child on Christmas Eve, visions of sugar plums dancing in our head. We thought it was going to be the most magical thing ever, going back into Banjo-Kazooie, accessing these areas like the chamber in Waz's cave, or, you know, the Gobi's Valley door, or jumping up Shark Food Island. And all it was in Banjo-Tooie was you break open this cartridge and it just plops out. The item plops out, yeah. Like flaccidly too. Like not even, there was not even any fanfare. The ice key, this beautiful, spinning, glorious treasure that we just stared at for hours in Banjo-Kazooie, it just flopped down on the ground. It didn't even spin, and it looked smaller than normal. And I remember on DK Vine saying, it's a trick. They're conning us. They're going to release the way to do it later. We have to investigate Banjo-Tooie further. What is the Flume of Doom? How do we get Black Eye to sail us back to Rusty Bucket Bay? There has to be a way. And when they released these codes, we were adamant, don't do it. This is going to basically brick your Banjo-Kazooie from ever being able to connect with Tooie the proper way. I wanted to believe so badly because it was basically my religion. It was my God. If I could not believe, I didn't even use the term stop and swap back then, because even though we discovered the term stop and swap from the codes and from unlocking the menu in Banjo-Kazooie that displayed the items you collected, we still weren't completely sure it was going to involve swapping as it inferred. So anyway, I say all this because in Donkey Kong 64, there was going to be another item that was going to be added to the eggs and the ice key. And you discovered, Steve, in the German player's guide that it was going to be a golden Kong statue. Like, looking like Donkey Kong. A hyper-stylized Donkey Kong. That's this golden relic. And we actually used it in our album artwork for this season of The Conversation. It's what my like a little cartoon avatar is clutching in his hands in the minecart. But we don't know what the Golden Kong statue would have actually been used for or what game it would have been used in. Because Paul Makachek claims that they had 6 games tentatively planned because they had about 6 games in stages of development when they first conceived it during the course of Banjo-Kazooie.
That's completely right. And we will get to cover on what those 6 were as the episode
there's
continues.
There's lots of theories.
Yeah, a lot of theories, a lot of speculation.
And of course, what they would have been in 1998 and 1999 would have probably differed from what they would have been had Stop and Swap actually been able to survive and had the natural course of events continued. But yeah, I've got theories, you've got theories, you've got new theories. I might argue with your new theories. We'll see. It'll be a good time.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
So we do have calls to take, but before we do that, I do have a few things to plug coming my way and on your end as well. So, DK Vine is on TeePublic. We have a merchandise store at dkvine.com/merchandise. In fact, if you like Stop and Swap, we have the shirt for you. It's the Don't Stop Till You Swap Enough t-shirt, which displays the items from Banjo-Kazooie in a handy checklist on your torso. So anybody you see in your daily life can come up to you with a Sharpie and say, yeah, I got that one. I got that one. Ooh, I need that one. So they will thank you for providing a healthy and helpful cheat sheet for their own Stop and Swap quest. And you can get it at dkvine.com/merchandise. We also, and I say this as March is starting to wind down, you'll want to get in on this if you haven't. We have a giveaway on our Blue Sky account. Now, Blue Sky is the new Twitter alternative. It's open to the public now, and it's starting to get some steam. And we would like to get more eyes on our Blue Sky account, not ice, eyes. And to do that, we're giving away 2 googly eye pins from Fangamer, official Banjo-Kazooie merchandise that they've since retired, and we're giving away 2 of them, googly eye pins that you can put on your clothes, on your hat, on a piece of fruit, if you want and be like, ooh, look, it's Otto the Orange from off of Banjo-Kazooie. Ah, ha, 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 I'm very funny. You can do that with this, and it's normal. You can't buy them on Fangamer anymore, and it's a pity. But you can win them from us on Blue Sky. And to do that, you repost the Eyes of March contest, which is what I brilliantly called it. We'll be drawing two lucky winners from the raffle, and that's at dkevin.com/bluesky. Finally, Steve, you have a website. Now, I call you Steve from off of Rare Gamer, not because that's your given name.
No, my parents weren't that cruel.
No, it's because you have what you co-run, a website called Rare Gamer.
Yeah, so it's raregamer.co.uk. It's Canadian run, but England supervised, administrated. It's weird, but yeah, it's a place that you can get all of your Rare news and stuff. Any game they've made all the way back to the Ultimate days in 1983 with Jetpack, up to current day stuff. You know, Sea of Thieves coming up with Perfect Dark, Everwild, all that stuff will be covered there. And it is a different, unique site from DK Vine. I want to stress that for both Paul Makacek online and Greg Mayles in person, because they always think that we're together on DK Vine for some reason. But it's its own thing. I'm a separate entity. I'm just as crazy as Heil, but we are different in our own little way. So raregamer.co.uk if you want to go check that out.
Yeah, I think they tend to conflate us because we've done some of these episodes together, and your...
Yep.
I was going to say passion, but it's more inanity. Your hyper-focus on the nonsensical. Yeah, it matches my own, but you go for different areas than I do. But yeah, it's kind of hard to explain to Greg or Paul that, yeah, you know, we both have Rare sites, communities, but... You know, I go a little outside of Rare because I also have to follow characters that they created that are no longer under their purview, but still exist within their shared world, like Diddy Kong and Benny Bear, you know, all the classics. But it's just hard to explain to them.
Yeah, I think at this stage, Rare just looks at us and goes, see that? Heil? He's crazy. And see Steve? He's a loon. They're both crazy. They're both the same thing.
We were also both at Rare in 2016. We got to go together. We were part of the same group. We have, like, mm-hmm. some of the most dedicated longtime fans that hadn't burned the bridges yet because of Nuts and Bolts or whatever, or Kinect Sports. Yeah. We got to go to play Sea of Thieves before... the general populace did, and we both got to play the fabled TT build of Sea of Thieves, Steve, which I talk of it and people think I'm mad, but you witnessed it too. You can attest TT was in the game.
He was, yeah. So if you want to follow that and make a DKU because of that, I mean, who's to say? If it's part of development and then it's taken out, it's still technically DKU. I know it's a tree that falls in the woods scenario, but surely if you plan to do something and you do up a sketch or write a book or something and then you don't release it, surely that makes it still something you wrote, you know?
Well, Steve, you're just talking nonsense. Sea of Thieves is DK. Sea of Thieves is DKU because Greg Mayles sails as Captain Black Eye. And also and if that fails, the Pepito Kong rule. Which because I am in the credits of Sea of Thieves, I have word of God over all Kong-based materials in the game. Therefore, my monkey in Sea of Thieves, Pepito Kong, is a canonical Kong. And therefore, based on DK Vine's Pepito Kong role of 1999 to 2000, it means that Sea of Thieves is DKU if you discount Greg Mayles being Captain Black Eye. Because I want Captain Black Eye in the game as an NPC. And of course, that will... overwrite Greg Mayles sailing as Captain Black Eye, but until that, Greg Mayles sailing as Captain Black Eye will do. But if you don't believe that, then the Pepito Kong rule gets Sea of Thieves in the DKU, because come on, it references Banjo Conker, Viva Pinata. It's Donkey Kong. It has so many Donkey Kong references in it. It's part of the DKU, but it's lacking a physical appearance. And how do we get over that hump? Well, it's Greg Mayles sailing as Captain Black Eye, or the Pepito Kong rule. If you don't think Greg Mayles sailing as Captain Black Eye should count, because that's just Greg Mayles saying, hey, I'm Captain Black Eye. And you're like, put Captain Black Eye in the game, you bastards. It's been 6 years.
I think I know why Rare looks at us as crazy now.
They need to be more compassionate and a little bit more tolerant about mental health, because you can't just go around calling people crazy in 2024. We're more accepting of everyone's little foibles.
Societally different then.
yeah. So anyway, Rare Gamer. It's your ultimate guide for the Rare Cal. Speaking of the Rare Cal, we have a Rare Cal aficionado or two in a live stream chat because Freezer is there. Freezer, the second biggest advocate for the Rare Cal outside of Rare Gamer. Hello, Freezer. We got the Snake Fighter 64 is back. We've got Porygon Q. We've got Plastasm. Plastasm's here, everyone. You can relax. Yeah, we'll check in with the live stream as we go. Now, I said we have some calls. And normally we play the calls towards the end, but I feel as though playing the calls earlier in the episode, i.e. right now, will do us good because these will serve as more of a prelude for what we will be discussing on this episode. So if you would like to call the DK Vine hotline, you can call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week by dialing 1-202-630-VINE. That is 8463. We announce a topic on social media and to our patrons or the DK Vine forum, and you can then dial in if we solicit calls and leave your thoughts about the topic. And assuming we don't get inundated, assuming it's not a tsunami of people yammering and filling up the hotline, we will try to play all of them. Thankfully, generally, we don't get that much in the way of calls every episode, so I can usually do that. Sometimes it gets a bit excessive, and I'm still doing it anyway because I have no self-control. But it's just four now. So, Steve, why don't we go ahead and play the first call? We'll chat about it, and then we'll play the second call, and so on and so forth until the calls are done. And then you can explain to me why we had to do a fourth Stop and Swap episode.
Sounds good. I'll try and think of a reason now.
Hey, this is Jennifer, a.k.a. I'm not going to give you all my screen names again like last time. That was just ate up time. So, Stop and Swap this time. Okay. This is the legacy of Rare. When I first got into Banjo-Kazooie, it was this, like, we'd heard a lot about it. It was, we kind of knew what it was, like, when I first got into it, it was in, like, the 2010s, I want to say, when I was in high school. And we kind of knew what it was. We had the XBLA implementation, but, like, we still, even to this day, don't know what the entire original plan was. And, like, I think about it a lot whenever I think about Banjo-Kazooie and the original stuff, to the point where, like, I, as an aspiring game developer, I want to incorporate a similar system into my own games, although obviously without swapping cartridges. It's just the idea of these transferring items being relevant, and I don't know, it's just, it's so cool, and it's such a shame that it ended up being completely axed except for the stuff that was in the original Banjo-Kazooie, and I don't know. I always wondered what the big grand prize was going to be for the whole Stop and Swap thing. What did you think the big grand prize was going to be? What were your fantasies about what Stop and Swap was going to reveal? Anyway, have fun talking about it with your co-host. I forgot what the reveal said his name was. Goodbye.
Yeah, it's Steve. It's Steve from Off of Rare Gamer.
Yeah.
Hi,
I've
Steve.
Never heard melancholy delivered so well in a phone call before. Just the ennui of, oh.
thank you, Jennifer, who is also a.k.a. the Snake Fighter 64 in our live stream chat. She didn't go over that this time, but I remember. Yeah. So, yeah, Steve, I mentioned before, like, of course, because I didn't know Donkey Kong 64 was going to be part of it until years later. And I, of course, I didn't know that other games were also earmarked for it. So as far as I was aware, Banjo-Tooie was going to be it. And I didn't know it was going to involve cartridge swapping. I didn't know it was going to be swapping hot or cold. I just thought, you know, the biggest theory, like I discussed with Josh Wallen on the last episode of The Conversation, when we briefly somehow touched upon Stop and Swap, being a 90s kid and being an information sponge and also being super envious of anything cool that another console did that I didn't own, I thought, oh, a lock-on cartridge like Sonic and Knuckles. That's the only way you could do it, right? So I thought Banjo-Tooie was going to be the special cartridge that Nintendo had commissioned just for this one specific thing. And of course, that's stupid that Nintendo would never go for that. Nintendo wouldn't go for a lot of things, it turns out. But I thought, like I said, we were going to get a new world in Banjo-Kazooie. And I thought maybe we would get another world unlocked in Banjo-Tooie after the fact as well. And like anything could have been a clue. Like I said, this was our generation's Paul is Dead, right?
Yeah.
Where
conspiracy
we're just
theory abound. Yeah,
we're just scouring everything. Everything has a potential clue. Everything leads you to the next clue. Like going into Grunty's lair, you got the transformation chamber room with the doors. And you're like, okay, all right. So there's stuff going on here. Like,
yeah,
these doors won't lock, and maybe they go straight into Banjo-Tooie. So at the most I was thinking in terms of what is this all going to do, it was give us more worlds. Because that was, to me, the coolest thing you could do. Like giving you entirely new worlds beyond what was in the commercially released game at the time. And of course, that was never going to be the case, I don't think. And Jennifer spoke to like the grand prize of Stop and Swap, like what it would have been past the knowledge of these like six games being unveiled. I don't know if there would have been a grand prize.
Well, technically with the Ice Key, I suppose there would be one that required all of the games to be, you know, elaborated on, perhaps. But yeah, like the way that this branches off, we likened Stop and Swap before to a rabbit hole. It is no longer a rabbit hole. It is an ant colony.
Yeah.
You know, like we have tunnels that cross over each other, that go deeper, that split off, that branch into this and go across, like on top, below. Like it's insane. So what Stop and Swap would have been fully intentional if it had gone through, it's mammoth. I don't even think we can tackle it anymore. We'll try to with this episode, but, you know, trying to see what the big grand prize would be, like, you'd almost think a new game, you know? Like, it's just, it's a lot.
Another theory I really liked, which, not the case, but having Banjo and Kazooie running around Donkey Kong 64.
Yeah. Having all the characters that represented, yeah, the other games. Yeah, that was the other one.
Getting them all together, yeah. But, yeah, well, we'll touch upon a little bit of it, I suppose, in the episode to come. But let's go ahead and play our second call.
Hi, this is Keith Stack. I'm calling in for the latest Stop and Swap episode of The Conversation. So this may be a dumb question, and I apologize if it has been covered in the past, but why didn't they just use the memory card controller packs for Stop and Swap? It seems like it would have been a heck of a lot easier than swapping out cartridges and stuff.
Well, yes, Keith, thanks for the call. That's actually something that gets asked quite a bit.
For sure. Should I tackle this technical question you don't like to cover?
yeah, because I don't know anything about the technical issues of anything. I'm far more fanciful. I live in a pretend world where these are real characters and real environments, and they're not just ones and zeros. So please, Steve, have at it.
So with the origin of Stop and Swap, Paul Makachek was approached by Tim Stamper, who is co-founder of the company, and told, we want to try and have a way that players can exchange information without having use of the memory card. So from the get-go, they were going, let's not use a conventional means. Let's try and find an unconventional means to do this. And also, in speaking with some developers after the fact, had they used a memory card in Banjo-Kazooie, it would have added on development time that they were already pretty short on, considering that it had been delayed. It was supposed to be a Christmas game. And they're like, look, we're, you know, really pushing it for, you know, trying to get all it's worth out of it. So any delays, any potential, like, let's try and power through that and just keep on working away and make this the best game it can be just as a core. So that's, you know, ultimately why they didn't add it on afterwards, because you might consider, oh, contingency plans and stuff. But at the time, they believed, and it was true. They're like, this works. This system is foolproof. And there's nothing that can stop us now. And then unfortunately, Nintendo said, no, we can stop you now because we're really nervous about this idea of you ripping out cartridges and putting new ones in. So we're going to say, don't do that. And of course, with that, you've canceled any ability for them to be able to transfer it. Now, they did put the Sandcastle codes in. And the whole idea behind that was, if we can't get Donkey Kong 64 or Banjo-Tooie to send code for Banjo to read, what we can do at least is we can have players knock those out and then grab the items, and then they'll be able to transfer that way there. So it was like, what if this only works as a one-way system? And that's the reason they had it as a contingency plan with the Sandcastle codes. Mm-hmm. But for as far as the memory card goes, that is the reason. They said, we want to do something magical. And it was magical because, you know, the way that Stop and Swap work, you would do something in the second game. You'd set an event in motion, and you were specifically shown a cutscene. So I just want to set the stage here where, you know, you're playing in Banjo-Tooie. You approach Black Eye. He tells you something. The screen fades to black. You see Shark Food Island. We have a camera that looks at it, and it's underwater. And then all of a sudden it goes, and it rises up, and it stands still. And the cutscene fades out, and you're back in Jolly Roger's Lagoon. And Black Eye says something to the effect of, that just happened, go check Banjo-Kazooie. In essence, you'd go, hold on, did that literally just, you grab the Banjo-Kazooie cartridge, you turn off the game, you pull out Banjo-Tooie, you put in Banjo-Kazooie, you turn on the power, lo and behold, you visit Treasure Trove Cove, there it is, risen out of the water. It was magic. That is magic that I've just described to you, you know? Yeah. So that was why they were so fixated on having it work by just cartridge swapping and without memory. Because with a memory card, you're just going, well, your save file is read by the memory, and that's boring.
I think had they known and had they had a little bit more time to implement it, they would have just gone down that route. But
true.
I can't blame them in 1998 for doing it this way. Because
yeah. The problem was, too, you'd have the game already out. So there's no way to, you know, it's not like you could do it today because you just offer an update on the internet.
Right.
But the cartridges are already in the hands of the players. It's like, well, too late.
Well, and that's really what makes this notion of Stop and Swap so romantic, especially for those of us who were around back in the day, or at least have an appreciation of the old school hardware and software in play here, because we've seen something similar proposed or hinted at in Yooka-Laylee with the pirate treasure. Yep. And while cool and while I'm really excited to see if that ever gets paid off, it's not the same. Because the magic behind Stop and Swap was, how are they going to do this? And 1998 was also the year Pokemon came out in the West. And so the idea, this was even like predating Pokemon's release. So the idea that there would be some sort of communication between video game cartridges, these complete isolated islands unto themselves, it was just so unreal, and that's why some of us didn't even believe that when the game told us we'd have to wait till Banjo-Tooie, we're like, well, that makes no sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, well, and especially too, because the photographs, the Polaroids we were shown, it was in engine that we were showing. Like, it wasn't just Mumbo telling us, oh, you'll collect these. It was, let me show you how these are meant to be collected.
Right.
So they're in the game. We can see an area that it's literally projected and shown to us. So we knew somehow you could get them. Yeah.
And like I said, the real thrilling idea of, we're going to let you explore a new area in the game. Like, even if there weren't new worlds in play, the fact that you could still go behind that sheet of ice, the fact that you could go up Shark Food Island, like the interior of it, that was very real and still very tantalizing.
Exactly. Because, yeah, it's almost DLC. You know, it's things that you haven't done yet in the game that you will come back to years later to do. So, yeah, it was very forward thinking. And you know, it's what makes the first calls on Wii so tragic, because that's, you know, if I were to, you said at the start of the episode, formalize stop and swap in 50 words or less. If you said formalize stop and swap in one sound or less, it would be, ah, because you just, you know, you just, it's what could be and the potential there and the loss of it. It causes you to mourn it. So,
yeah,
that's what stop and swap is.
All right, let's go ahead and play our third call.
Hey, DK Vine, it's Rayday Pinball. I heard there's a Banjo-Kazooie conversation episode, so I decided to call in because I absolutely love Banjo-Kazooie. And Stop and Swap is definitely kind of part of the reason I got into the whole, like, internet thing, I guess. You know, back in the Rare Witch Project days, you know, I want to know, how do you get that ice key? You know, you Google, you find the Rare Witch Project, you join the forums, you read all the crazy theories, you find the sandcastle code, all that good stuff. Oh man, that was such a good time back then. Yeah, I don't really have much. I guess I will say I did actually successfully perform stop and swap on my Project 64 emulator by setting the memory addresses in that, you know, article or the cutting room floor has listed, and it actually worked. I set those addresses and boom, Shark Food Island was raised. So that was pretty cool. Oh yeah, Stop and Swap 2. What's up with that? I defeated all the bosses on Xbox Banjo-Tooie in, you know, super fast time, and it was such a pain in the butt. And all I got was like, an achievement or something. And then there was like these other, you know, bronze eggs and things. Did that ever go anywhere? Is that gonna go anywhere? Was that just kind of a joke? Just to make us, you know, remember the time where we're, you know, oh, remember Stop and Swap? Yeah, anyway. Looking forward to the episode. See ya.
Thank you for the call, Rayday Pinball. Yeah, it was a joke.
So with Stop and Swap 2, yeah, we do discuss that in the first episode, just as we, you know, track the linearity of it. So for those that don't know, Stop and Swap 2 was introduced in the XBLA release of Banjo-Tooie, which came out in 2009. So it was 9 years after the first game came out. And as you'll notice, we're not in 2009 anymore, and nothing has happened with that. So, you know, it's amazing that a canceled feature that never got to live was followed up by a canceled feature that never got to live. So Rare does, you know, granted that everything does stay on the Xbox and that backwards compatibility is a thing as they go into the future with their next iteration of their console, or they come out with a video game that can address those memory storage, you know, even cloud games, because I've heard there's some, you know, accessibility there where you can play cloud games and still get Stop and Swap working on your Xbox cloud. If that's the case, someday they have the option to make it work. We'll just, you know, have to wait, geez, I guess another decade, because it's almost been a decade now since, well, longer actually, since Banjo-Tooie XBLA has come out. So you've got plenty of time to catch up on it if you want to get them. So there's that at least.
I feel like Stop and Swap became such an in-joke across the DKU, really. Like, after Banjo-Tooie gave us the, what I call the fake ice key and the fake eggs, there was just this, like, incredulous feeling that, okay, but when's the real connection going to happen? Because it was very unsatisfying, and it did, honestly, unfortunately, color my impression of Tooie a little bit. It left a bad taste in my mouth, because the hype of Banjo-Tooie, the initial hype before it was ever officially announced, was based on this idea of getting the ice key and the eggs. And when it was paid off in such unspectacular fashion, it really was just this crestfallen moment. It was like the first time this adult you really look up to lets you down in life. It's like, and had I had some more self-reflection, I would have realized the first time Rare let me down was Donkey Kong 64. But I was still trying to Phantom Menace it into being something like really, really brilliant. And so and a lot of other people were just left wanting and left speculating. And so you would have jokes and things like Grab by the Ghoulies about Stop and Swap. You would have jokes in Banjo Pilot about Stop and Swap, where you like the biggest thing you can buy from Cheeto in Banjo Pilot is the answer to Stop and Swap. And all Cheeto does is he says, why don't you stop playing this game and swap it out for a good book?
I understand too now why they had to do what they did in terms of placing the objects in the game, because there is no connection, you know? And even in that letter that Nintendo sent, they provided some solutions on what you could do in Donkey Kong 64. And considering those solutions, you go, none of this works, guys. Like, this doesn't, you know, it's going to be a letdown, unfortunately. And it does suck to say that, because you're like, well, if this doesn't work, potentially, it's like, there is nothing you could do that would ever live up to what you promised already. And I have actually considered, what if Rare hadn't told us there was items in the first game? What if they just released it and you just went, that desert door kind of looks odd. That X barrel kind of is a weird thing. And they just walled up the ice key, you know, and didn't show that at all. Mm. If we had Banjo-Tooie and Stop and Swap ended up getting canceled between those two, if they just said, let's never mention it again, you just have these items that you would never know about. And then someday, sure, potentially data miners go in there and find it and that would relive it again.
Yeah.
But you know, it was their own excitement that was their undoing, because they said, oh, look, secret items, you can get them. And Banjo-Tooie, wait for it. Wait. Oh, no, it's gone. You know,
it's one of the best end of game hooks that I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to go back and wish it was never there, even if the letdown was pretty significant. Yeah. But yeah, I feel like with Stop and Swap 2, they were just basically thinking, look, Stop and Swap has been such a big part of the vocabulary of Banjo-Kazooie fans, of Rare fans, for the better part of a decade. We can't just resolve it. And I felt that the XBLA Stop and Swap ideas were also a letdown. Here's the thing, Stop and Swap is always going to be a letdown, even if it paid off, because the ideas that it put in your head of what it could be were always going to outweigh what they were going to use it for, which is going to be pretty much what they used it for in Banjo-Tooie, which you can get a code here, you can augment this, you can maybe turn Kazooie into a dragon. You know, it was never going to be anything hugely significant, partially because you don't want to, like, wall anything behind. You have to have this game to unlock this content. Yeah. Or even worse, you have to have six games to unlock this content. So,
well, and as Rare had said too, like, you know, they are nifty bonuses. If you read up the rumor mill, they said, you know, is anything of Stop and Swap going to stop me from completing Banjo-Kazooie or Banjo-Tooie? They're like, no, this is just cool little nifty bonuses that you can use that are going to be, you know, sought after kind of thing. You know, like if I had my copy of Banjo-Tooie and I have regular Kazooie in my backpack, if I see my friend has used Stop and Swap to get a dragon, that's very nifty and very alluring. I'm going to want that too. So, you know, they did, you know, deliver some very, very cool stuff. But yeah, our minds definitely ran away with us with the imagination. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I think they just wanted to add that ellipses there. Like, it never ends. You know, you'll always be left daydreaming about Stop and Swap if we have any say in the matter. So I think it was just a clever joke. I don't put any stock in them ever paying it off, even though, as you said, they could, because
they could.
Everything on the Xbox is like pee in the pool, right? It's always in there.
Pee in the pool. Yeah, it's a good analogy.
Yeah, thank you. I'm good at coming up with analogies, especially when they relate to bodily fluids.
Fair enough.
All right, one more call, and then we'll get into the heart of the episode, where you can explain to me what's new in the world of Stop and Swap.
Hey guys, this is Ryan Haas, as you all well know from the Super Mario Brothers the Movie archive. And yeah, I love Stop and Swap. I had to talk about Stop and Swap. I am glad you're doing yet another episode about it, because I missed getting to voice my opinion on the first two. I didn't try hot swapping back in the day, but I certainly rented copies of Banjo-Kazooie from Blockbuster and did Game Shark codes on them to get the eggs and the ice key, so my personal copy would not be messed up. And I eventually bought that Blockbuster copy. So I would, when it went on sale, so I would have both. But yeah, I'm very excited to hear your thoughts. And I want to hear more about Stop and Swap 2, and I was never able to beat Lord Wu Fox Fox in the time limit, so I still have one more thing to go, and, you know, hasn't bitten me yet, because who knows where that's going, but one can dream.
Well, thanks for the call, Ryan. Yeah, see? Stop and Swap. It brings everyone together. We've got scholars of the Bob Hoskins Super Mario Brothers movie, Keith Stack, famed cartoonist, called in, Ray Day Pinball, international pinball champion. And you, Jennifer, I'm not sure of your accomplishments, but I know they're grand. We've got everyone calling in to talk about this feature. But I think Stop and Swap looms so large in the imagination still. And yeah, same. I still have not besmirched my original Banjo-Kazooie cartridge by getting the ice key and the eggs. Because, yeah, once you got them on one cartridge, that was it. You were done. No, it didn't matter if you were in a new save file or not. They were just not there. I didn't do it on the like N64 version of Banjo-Kazooie until Nintendo Switch Online added Banjo-Kazooie because you can actually jump back to a save state before you had yoinked them. So
yep.
There's a workaround there. But yeah, I was always very precious with, no, I can't do it, because when they eventually reveal the real way to do it, then I will already have them.
I just bought two copies of Banjo-Kazooie. That's how that works. You just have an expendable copy that you don't care about.
Fair enough.
You have three more save files on it, too, yeah. So that works there. In terms of beating Lord Wufakfak, if you look up Lord Wufakfak on Rareware Archives, the YouTube channel, you can actually see me earn my Stop and Swap 2... I believe it's called Now Who's Boss, the Stop and Swap 2 reward. So if you want a tutorial of me being very, very lucky and just clinching it, you can try and watch that and recreate the steps I do. As Heil has said before, both Heil and I are not exceptional gamers. We are very average. So if you want to see me do something exceptional, very, very lucky and almost a fluke, then you can watch that video, because we're very studied with Stop and Swap. We can play for, or we could talk for 6 hours. We can't play well for 6 hours on a video game. So...
So you're behind Rareware Archives.
Yep.
Why isn't it Rare Gamer?
Because, okay, so the start of it, we were called Spiral Mountain. And then we said, we're just covering the Banjo games. And then we moved on from that and said, you know what? We got to expand. We got to cover all of Rare games. So we'd almost be an archive. So we decided to call ourselves Rareware Archives. And the old address, if you look it up in the Wayback Machine, is rarewarearchives.co.uk. And we came to a point where we said, you know what? The whole archives thing, I like it that it's kind of a, you know, for posterity, but it almost looks like we're looking backwards. You know, we're not looking forwards at what Rare's now creating. We're looking backwards at what they did do. And just as we expanded from doing just the Banjo games to now doing Rare's catalog, we want to be able to say, well, we're doing Rare's catalog and their future stuff. We're gamers of Rare. We're Rare gamers. And that's where that came from. So
why haven't you changed the YouTube channel then?
Oh, I guess I just haven't gotten around to it.
Okay. You got to get better about your branding, Steve.
Oh, I know.
All right. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, callers. Thank you, everyone. So, Steve, what are the latest developments in the world of Stop and
All
Swap?
All right. Yeah, so as I believe it was the third caller said that they just used the emulator on Project 64 to enable Stop and Swap. And that was a find by the cutting room floor during the third episode that we touched on, where they ended up finding the mechanism for Stop and Swap. So they said, you know, when Banjo-Kazooie first boots up, the first thing it does, even, you know, doing lockout chips and all that nonsense and loading up the cutscene where the buzz bomb hits the Rare logo, the first thing it does is it checks memory and goes, looking for a checksum. Anybody got a checksum for me? Looking. No? Okay. And then it'll just start up like normal. But if it has a very specific digit, as intended from Banjo-Tooie or Donkey Kong 64. It'll say, looking for it. Ah, there it is there. I'm going to, you know, raise up Shark Food Island. I'm going to open up that door in Gobi's Valley. I'm going to break the ice in Freezeezy Peak. I'm going to do both eggs in Mad Monster Mansion. I'm going to get that bed with that red egg in Rusty Bucket Bay, or I'm going to load up Nabnut's table. So it does all those things depending on which digit you get. So it does it one at a time. And of course, if you can freeze time and stop time, you can cheat the system, because you can say in Project 64, ooh, actually, I've got a checksum right here. And the game doesn't know any better. It just goes looking for it. There it is. And it'll unlock those worlds. The amazing thing this time that we're talking about, and like half of the episode, is going to be dedicated to the fact that someone in real life has actually enabled Stop and Swap on real hardware by modifying The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time to enable themselves to go into Banjo-Kazooie in real life and unlock the items for the first time ever outside Twi Cross.
Okay, so this means that Link enters Grunty's lair.
Yeah, that means that Link is DKU now. You have to cover all the Zelda games, Heil. I'm sorry.
No, I refuse to do that. He got so few hero coins in Donkey Kong Country 2. Yoshi got more than him. Screw this guy.
Yeah, and it's not like a very popular franchise either, so I just ignore it.
Yeah, I mean, Breath of the Wild, okay game. Basically mid. What would have been a classic had it starred Donkey Kong or Benny Bear. Now, people are thinking it. Everyone's just too much of a coward to say it.
What's the sound? Is that everybody turning this off? So yeah, that was the newest development there, was that you know, somebody had done it in real life, and they posted it on YouTube. There was huge fanfare over it. And luckily for us, Paul Makacek actually weighed in on his restoration, talking about it in the comments, and it's kind of serving as a impromptu QA session. So the first thing he said was, don't do it like that. Don't hot swap. It's supposed to be cold swapped. You're supposed to turn it off, then remove the game, put the new one in, then turn it on as a power cycle. So that was the first thing he said. But then the further answers that he gave to the people in the comments really enlightened us on the true nature of what Stop and Swap was. Because even up to the last episode, we thought, okay, look, there's six games, there's six eggs, and one key that's supposed to go through all six games. So each game gets an egg, that's it. You know, that's as far as we knew it. And this causes it to just, you know, this is the anthill analogy, where it's now tunneling underneath and going in different directions, because Paul had huge ambitions for what Stop and Swap would be. So do you want to read Paul's quote?
Well, I'm not going to do his voice.
Well, no. Yeah.
So this is his quote. This was given where?
Oh, sorry. So yeah, this was on Retro Hour. Okay. At 56 minutes and 11 seconds. So he touched upon this when he was sitting with the Retro Hour guys as he reflected on Stop and Swap.
It's a podcast.
It's a podcast. Yeah, okay. On YouTube. You can find it. Yep.
Okay. So Paul sat down with the Retro Hour podcast in September of last year, and he had this to say. It wasn't just, let's do a sequel to Banjo. Swap those two cartridges backward and forward, and they send each other stuff. It's like, well, what about Perfect Dark? Can we do something with Perfect Dark? Diddy Kong Racing had already shipped, so that was out of the window. So the discussion was, we were looking at roughly six games in different states of development at that time. So why don't we try to connect them all? And it wouldn't be that Banjo sends a bunch of codes to the next game they were going to release, which was DK64, and then that would send something to Conker or Tooie. It would be, why don't they send codes in lots of different directions? So it's like a spider's web, a maze of sending code from this to that, to that, to that.
I thought you said you weren't going to do an impression. So yeah, we now look upon Stop and Swap not as a linear swap, which we did. We thought before you would send one-to-one game back to the other, and that was the link, the Stop and Swap. But now we find out it's a spider's web, where we're not only like, you know, you have something like Banjo-Kazooie to Donkey Kong. We were believing, okay, we have a locked door in Donkey Kong made of ice. We have an ice key in Banjo-Kazooie made of ice. Clearly, this key belongs in that game. Perfect. But now we're finding out, well, that is true for that bit, But also we have a golden statue that you can only get by getting Conker to swap with Donkey Kong that would then provide Perfect Dark, this code that would give to Dinosaur Planet to come back into Donkey Kong 64. It's you know, an insane, convoluted, you know, crisscrossing path that just, you know, blows our minds, frankly. Like, we never anticipated this.
Yeah, I think the speculation when you uncovered the golden Donkey Kong statue, Steve, was that this might have been the case, right? Because you have this beautiful, shiny relic from Donkey Kong 64. So maybe that goes back into Banjo-Kazooie, sure. But also, if there are six games involved, who's to say? And yeah, like, what if Conker could run around with the golden Donkey Kong statue? What then? And of course, you know, when we're mentioning Conker, we're envisioning 12 Tails Conker 64. We're not talking about Bad Fur Day. You know, I don't even know how that would work. You know, like, maybe he lures King B with the golden Donkey Kong statue, and the King B just has sex with that instead of the sunflower, you know, because of dad ass. Who knows? could have even been a menage a trois, you know, with all three of them. A thruple, which are very in vogue right now.
Yeah, so that was the maze that we were kind of introduced to there. And he said something further. I guess I'll do this one in my poorest Paul Makachik impression. And this was in the Skawo's video. I want to try and get his name correct here. Let me just see if I can pronounce it. Yeah, Skawo. So S-K-A-W-O is how you say that. So Skawo, Skuo, something like that. Anyway,
all right.
Hope I'm getting it right. They would have released in the same order that we did actually release them. Apologies, but I can't recall now what they were. I'm sure the internet will know, and we are highly likely to have developed our ideas around what was possible with Stop and Swap as those games progressed. But they would have been connected in a complex web with codes going in lots of different directions from each game to most/all of the others. That's as clear as I can be.
All right. So, your thoughts?
So, yeah, that just helps, you know, express what we knew before, which is that, you know, this is a lot bigger than what we knew. And of course, it speaks to the fact that, you know, the Stop and Swap eggs, this is why they're generic Easter eggs, because they're given to different games not knowing what was capable. So rather than put a gun for Perfect Dark in Banjo, you put an Easter egg in Banjo that's given to Perfect Dark that then hatches and you give Joanna a gun. So there's that whole thing working out for it. But the idea that, like, each game has its own prize that would then hand off to another game, like, this has a lot of potential to almost become, you know, its own design pitch meeting. I can just see Greg Males, you know, scribbling out all these things going, wait, which goes where? And this goes here? And, oh, okay. And of course, this goes there to there to there. You know, it has a lot of potential to become very convoluted and complex.
Yeah, for sure. What egg do you think would have had the gun in it, though, out of all of them?
Okay, so I've actually thought about this before. This was back when I thought each egg was intended for one game only.
Mm.
And now, of course, we know, like, who knows what the full scope of Stop and Swap would have been. But you can kind of X them off as you go. So with Banjo-Tooie, and we'll discuss this episode, why this might not be the case anymore, but I was assured that the pink egg was for Banjo-Tooie.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have Black Eyes surrounded by those pink egg portraits, you know, in a nautical-themed level of Jolly Roger's Lagoon. You also have Banjo-Kazooie with Treasure Trove Cove, also a nautical level, with the pink egg. So it makes sense that the pink egg was for Banjo-Tooie. So we scratch that one off the list. The yellow egg in Nabnuts, well, Nabnuts a squirrel, it's yellow, Conker's a squirrel, that works there. You know, Juno from Jet Force Gemini has a crowbar, and we have a wine barrel with bars on it. Well, he could remove those, that gives him the cyan egg. So Perfect Dark would be green, red, or blue, I suppose. And I'm thinking about the Egyptian ties they have there. So maybe the blue egg? I'm not sure. And again, Rare didn't really plan this out knowing what was concrete or not. You know, it was just what was available to them in Banjo-Kazooie's levels, thinking, okay, one day we'll get to attach these two. So, you know, it would have been rather difficult to do Perfect Dark. Because with Donkey Kong, it works. You're talking about a cartoon animal to a cartoon animal. But Perfect Dark would have been very weird to all of a sudden go into this, you know, Banjo-Kazooie vision where it's like, oh, we're suddenly, you know, talking about a talking bear and a talking bird at the same, you know, breath as we're shooting down Datadyne soldiers. So, you know, it'd be pretty messy there. But yeah.
I think there would be ways. Yeah, Perfect Dark is probably the biggest leap out of all of them as conceived at the time. but I still think there would be ways to go about it. It's not like there aren't humans running around the DKU, so you could stretch it, you could squint, you could make it work. My biggest thing is, if Nintendo didn't have a problem with the swapping itself, it would be linking M-rated games with their more all-ages fare. That would probably have been the biggest thing Nintendo would have tried to shut down if they didn't have a problem with everything else.
And to be fair, too, I believe probably at one point Perfect Dark might have been going for a T rating. And I think that's acceptable, because even GoldenEye back in the day, you go, okay, I was a teenager, 13 years old, playing, you know, N64 with GoldenEye and Banjo in the same breath. Like, that was totally fine. But it's the M rating of Perfect Dark in a minimal sense. And then, of course, Conker's Bad Fur Day, not a chance, you know? Like, that was pushing the envelope to push the envelope. So I could definitely see them going, maybe we rethink including him in this, you know?
Then again, if they didn't use the green egg, the one you got on Lago, they could have made the case for Nintendo, look, We have shit monsters, and we have this egg that is on a toilet. We have to do it. Go. And then it'll be like, damn, that's some next level game design. Not only will we say you can do that, but we now want to buy your studio outright.
Yeah. It's actually a little known fact. That was the reason that they remade Conker, is Greg Mail said, I've actually put that on the toilet. And they went, we'll have to change everything now. Yeah. Let's reboot Conker.
That's right. Okay. All right. So you know, this is basically Paul Magachek confirming what had been speculated about.
Yep. So should I read this, or would you like to?
which one am I reading here?
The problem was DK64.
Oh, well, that's how I start every sentence usually. All right. The problem was DK64 was going to manufacture, and we can't just rejig the backgrounds and the stuff that we'd set up that was enabled for Donkey Kong 64. We just disabled the minimum amount of stuff that we needed to change in the game and take out the scanning software. So that's why there's a few places where there's like a pedestal with nothing on it. There was supposed to be something on it. And you know, a week before we gave the final build to Nintendo, there was something sitting on that pedestal. I don't remember what it was now.
But we do, thanks to the Germans.
The golden Donkey Kong statue. I don't think people can fathom how late this golden Donkey Kong statue was actually in Donkey Kong 64.
Yeah, so it had actually skipped the kiosk build. So they had done a preview in the summer and basically compiled the game to be played you know, in small venues and stuff like that as a preview, you know, get this for Christmas kind of thing like that. It's available, you know, in a couple months. And it was not available in that at all. And there's two ideas. One is that they went, ooh, we can't put that in yet because we don't want to tease it, you know? And the other one is they hadn't gotten around to doing it. I'm leaning toward the second one because, as Balam has said, he's a Donkey Kong 64 mod sort of randomizer creator. He's a data miner himself. He does a lot of really cool stuff with Donkey Kong 64, but he's done me a favor, a massive solid, and looked through the game for any trace of Stop and Swap. And he says, like, there's not even cutscenes that are supposed to be in here involving other things. So he's like, they just hadn't gotten around to it. So I'm trusting him in that. So if that's the case, then yeah, it was like August and they still hadn't put Stop and Swap in. So you've got September, and that's it, because October 1st, that's when Nintendo freaked out and said, hey, let's take this out of here. So
Yeah. So as we've already discussed on prior installments of this quadrilogy, Nintendo, like, figured out what Rare was up to. They saw, like, it was like scanning. The Donkey Kong 64 cartridge was scanning for the code. And they were like, what? What? And
they let that slide with Banjo-Kazooie, but their precious Donkey Kong 64 for the holiday. No. Wrong way.
Well, I think that Banjo-Kazooie was published by Nintendo, so it's not like they didn't have any investment in Banjo-Kazooie. But for some reason, it went under the radar when they released it. And I'm amazed that nobody at Nintendo was like, hey, this ending for Banjo-Kazooie where you promise children that you can get these items with a sequel that hasn't even been greenlit yet. You can't do this.
Yeah. But then again, they didn't know the scope of it either. It could just be that they assumed, well, there's a sandcastle you can type codes in, of course, and these items are in the game anyway, so you just have to wait for Banjo-Tooie to give you the code. So they could have just thought that.
Yeah, they just... A lot of people had to be asleep to get that through. And I'm glad they were, because for as much chagrin as Banjo-Kazooie caused me when, you know, vis-a-vis the stop and swap when Banjo-Tooie came out, you know, ultimately the chase means so much to me that even though the destination was a letdown, I am glad to have gone on that journey.
Yeah, for sure. And that's kind of how you have to view Stop and Swap, and Stop and Swap 2 laterally as well, you know? I know it's not fun fighting Wufakfak, but getting that last one, there is, you know, a deserved amount of kudos to getting it, because it is very hard to get it down. So the fourth color, you will get there, trust me, and it feels well-deserved when you do.
But yeah, Donkey Kong 64, it was their big game for holiday 1999, and already you had to have the expansion pack to run it. And I guess there was more scrutiny going into the game. And they saw it was scanning for code, and this was in early October, you know, right before it was mass-produced and prepared to ship. And they said, well, they sent off a panicked fax to Rare and said, what is this? And Rare, they said, well, it does this and it does that. Isn't that clever? And Nintendo said, no, absolutely not.
And unfortunately, Paul wasn't in the room when they had that exchange. And he could have said, it's code swapping, don't worry, you know. But unfortunately, the private meeting and the amount of time left was just, strip it out, folks. We got to get this thing out the door. So
yeah. And Donkey Kong 64, like, I don't think people appreciate how rushed it actually was, really, to get it over that finish line for the Black Friday release window in 1999. You know, so many people at Rare basically had to pitch in to get it done. It was all hands on deck. Because Donkey Kong 64 was a game that was completely uprooted about halfway in its development. You know, it was something that was more or less completely different in execution. It had a scope and vision that was different from the one we got. They changed gears for it and sometime in 1998, and basically the edict was just make it more like Banjo. Like, the vision for Donkey Kong 64 that the original creative director had was so much in line with what I would have wanted in retrospect and would want today from a 3D Donkey Kong game. It's an identity all to its own, unique from Banjo-Kazooie and other 3D platformers, that's more in line with what came before with the Donkey Kong Country games. But for whatever reason, it was deemed to not be working. And maybe that's true. And they pivoted sometime in the middle of 1998, I want to say, which would shrink the development window dramatically if you're aiming for a late 1999 release. It was a race against time, and I'm not talking about the original subtitle for Donkey Kong Land 3. And as 1999 went on, more and more people had to join the cause. Chris Seaver was pulled from Conker, and Greg Males, like, I think Greg even helped design the final boss fight with K. Rool.
Yeah, and then Kev Bayless, of course, too. They would have pulled him off Dinosaur Planet to help out as well.
If you've ever wondered why the final fight with K. Rool, the boxing match, feels comparatively polished and full of ideas that pulls in all of the Kong's abilities in a very cohesive way, it's Greg Males.
Yeah. And if you're watching the DK64 credits as well, you'll see the team mentioned as they go through, and then you'll see Rare support, and there's a bunch of people from a bunch of different teams. So
bunch of different barns.
Yeah.
So the flop sweat was real with DK64. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I think it was like, well, screw artistic integrity. Screw creative vision. We just want to wash our hands of this whole thing and have a reliable million seller. And then everyone can get new Ferraris or Alfa Romeos. Yeah, I don't want to say it was full of compromises, but I also think they needed to placate Nintendo. This would have been a lot of stress, especially for the stampers bearing the brunt of it. So the hell with Stop and Swap. The hell with what we promised in Banjo-Kazooie. Let's just pluck this out at the last minute and kick the can down the road a bit for Banjo-Tooie. Which is why there's just a pillar in Donkey Kong 64, a podium in Creepy Castle that has nothing on it. Which sparked a lot of speculation back in the day. Like, what is this? Why is this there? Shouldn't there be something on it? I mean, clearly there's a spotlight on it.
Yeah. This is clearly meant to be on display, and it's not. And of course, Psy ended up sending a message to Rare using the Ask Tusk feature on their old website of, you know, what is this for? Why is this here? And he was told, oh, it's game development fluctuations. And of course, we didn't know at the time, it's Stop and Swap, baby, because we thought Banjo-Tooie has to do with Stop and Swap, not DK64, so we never made that link until, you know, afterwards.
I mean, 1999, we didn't even know what Stop and Swap was yet, did we?
Yeah, that's, I don't know, because they would have hacked the game with GameShark to levitate and grab the ice key. So it would have been in vogue, that term, but we never knew what it was exactly. We didn't know about cartridge swapping or anything.
Okay.
There was no link to allude to, you know, this is to use with Donkey Kong 64. We had no clue. We thought everything was Banjo-Tooie. So,
and that's why in past discussions we've had, I said, hey, it couldn't have been Jet Force Gemini as part of the six-game cycle, because Jet Force Gemini came out October 1999, and it would have already been manufactured and ready to ship when Nintendo found out about Stop and Swap and said, shut it down.
That does, you know, I do put on my conspiracy theory hat for this one, a little bit of tinfoil, because there is a small part of me, and, you know, hey, kids, there's a thing called confirmation bias. When you see things that don't align with your preconceived notions, you tend to argue with them because you want to know what it is, and you think you know, and there's a whole thing. It's the reason why we have elections turn out the way they do. So with that in mind, you know, I believe in my heart of hearts, oh, of course Jet Force Gemini is involved with this process because it would have been in development and they would have communicated. But then there's also the counter, which is like, no, this was just Banjo, just DK64, and then it was scrapped. I want to believe, just like Mulder and X-Files, that Jet Force Gemini has something in the game hidden. You know, there's a lot of mysteries in Jet Force. Like, if you go to the abandoned space station, you can go down 4 floors, and there's just a random elevator door that opens up to nothing. And that would be a perfect place to put the golden Donkey Kong statue, you know? And there's just a lot of leads and things like that. And you're thinking, well, Jet Force Gemini was developed internally by Rare. Not as much scrutiny onto it as Donkey Kong 64. They would have had all the focus on Donkey Kong 64, so the team could have squeaked that out the door. And hey, maybe it's looking for that trophy. Because, of course, if you have the eggs in Banjo-Kazooie, that should be all Jet Force Gemini needs to link up with Banjo-Kazooie. But if it's Donkey Kong 64 and they've taken that trophy out, oh my god, you'd never know, because it's still looking for those digits. And maybe we can enable those digits again, you know? Maybe we can have it work a second time. That'll be the next episode. Episode 5, Jet Force Gemini is part of Stop and Swap, blah. But, you know, at this point, it's like, Paul's been very clear. He's like, we did Banjo, Donkey Kong, that's it. That's all we had planned for it. So we looked at Jet Force knowing, hey, maybe we'll put that. Oh, wait, it's canceled.
Has anyone ever checked to see if Jet Force is scanning for code?
I believe there was somebody that looked into it once, and they found actually a few Rare games were scanning. But I don't know if that's a deliberate look for Stop and Swap or whether that's looking for lockout chips or something like that.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I looked up on that because I initially prepared to deliver that in this episode, and I looked back and I went, okay, they're not sure. It's not a guaranteed thing. But even that said, like, we're still finding stuff in DK64. And that game is, you know, and Banjo for, you know, all of its worth and everything. So there could be secret stuff hidden in the game that we don't know about until, you know, 5 years from now. But
yeah,
whether or not there's actually something hidden, that's, of course, you know, where the spoil sportery stuff comes in, right?
Right. Rare managed on one hand to create some very technically ambitious, absolutely gorgeous games on Nintendo hardware. They just blew away what you were supposed to be able to do on these systems. But to do that, they created these, I want to say, labyrinths of coding, which, house of cards that are very hard to replicate, let alone keep up when you're, say, emulating them years after the fact. But because there were so many layers compared to other games by other developers of that time period, it wouldn't surprise me if there was still some stuff waiting to be found.
Yeah, and even for game development tools, because there's a tool called Toad's Tool 64 that people use to modify Mario games and put new levels in. There's a tool called Bottle's Glasses, which is a model viewer, and you can create your own Banjo levels and stuff in the first Banjo game. It was actually created by one of our moderators from back in the Spiral Mountain days, but there's been nothing for Banjo-Tooie, and one of the efforts of that is Banjo-Tooie is very, very, very hard to code because it's so complex, you know? So there's, yeah, especially the latter era Rare games, oh my god, the amount of code that was going into them, and they're beautiful, you know, to look at and everything, but the code is just unending. You look at it and just go, you know... You know, something like Mario 64 would look like a pamphlet, but Dinosaur Planet is like, you know, a phone book in terms of what they were trying to cram in there. So, you know, very complex and very hard to break down. So, yeah. Now, should we discuss what we think the six might be?
Yes. I mean, I feel like we've already gone over this in the last episode, but I'm always willing to, you know, exchange fisticuffs about it again. You would like. Now, again, this would have been the six. When Paul says six games, he's speaking from the perspective of 1998. And not owing to the design realities, the development realities of how history in this timeline actually transpired. Meaning that whether or not it would have been six games all depends on a lot of different variables that don't actually apply to history as we know it.
Yeah, the games that we got and the games that were planned were very different. And this is before Mickey Speedway was even a vision. You know, like they had a lot on their plate in September of 1998. So I don't know if you saw it. I went on Twitter and I posted an aerial view of Manor Farm, the original Rare headquarters. And I actually had staff lean in and basically say, oh, I remember working there and I did this. And I was able to really take their feedback and go, okay, well, now I can establish this right here is the Conker barn. This right here is the Jet Force Gemini barn. And I was able to almost do a roadmap of Rare back in those days and basically have the six games of that series complete. So if you'll indulge me, I'd like to take you a little virtual tour of Manor Park, or Manor Farm, rather.
For those who aren't aware, the current Rare headquarters, and it has been the Rare headquarters since, was 2000?
It was actually during the development of Donkey Kong 64, I found out. So they would have, like, Jet Force Gemini would have released being, like, as a part of the transport. So they basically started DK64 at Manor Farm, and they finished it at Manor Park.
Yeah.
So that's how tight that was.
Manor Park, for those who aren't aware, is the current Rare headquarters. Manor Farm is where Rare used to be headquartered, and whenever we speak of the barns at Rare, it's because they were literal barns.
Yeah, that the barns and stables.
That the teams were working out of, refurbished barns and stables. So they moved to a more state-of-the-art facility in Twycross, and they dubbed it Manor Park as a tribute to a manor farm, the manor house that they used to be at. And then the barn vernacular remained for the teams up through... I guess the mid to late 2000s, but yeah, like that all stems from the fact that they were literally working out of barns until they moved to this more high-tech facility.
And we've had the incredible fortune of actually walking through those barns, the new ones at Manor Park. And they are laid out like barns, you know, you have the long building and everything and you go through and there's two floors. So, you know, it does look like barns if you're, you know, ever on a farm.
they wouldn't let us go in the one because that's the one they were working on Everwild in. But yeah, it's probably much nicer to work there than it was to work in old stables, but you know, there's something charming about them, like cranking out these like classic Donkey Kong games where, you know, horses once took poos.
No, oh, again, so eloquent with the analogies there, Isle. Where once horses took poos, we develop Rare. that's what they'll have on the banner.
I'm sure it would have been an apt comparison for all of the critics of the Donkey Kong Country games in the aughts. It's like, oh, of course they developed this. We're animal shit.
Well, and that was also, of course, the secret bovine bonus is what you'd find underneath your chair on days where a cow had been in the office. But yeah,
I'm not going to explain that, everyone. Steve's talking in like next level rare nerd vernacular. And I'm not going to explain everything for you if you don't know what he's referencing.
Yeah. Funny enough, I think if you do Google bovine bonus, it explains it on my site. I think mine's one of the first results because evidently super secret bovine bonus is a Google term that it's not very trendy. It's not popping up a ton of results. So if you do want to learn about it, type that up and I think you get my site. But anyways, what I'd like to do is give you a tour right now of what Rare was like back in September of 1998. So they used to develop everything out of their main house. So there'd be one kind of manor on the side. And since the 1980s, they were sitting in that house for the NES, Kevin Bayliss, David Wise, everybody just sitting in that one house and Paul Makacek too, working on games. And it was the mid-90s that they went, okay, we got to start expanding here. We have two stables that are out here, one barn and a stable. So it's 1994, we got a Donkey Kong Country team. So they're going to take the first one nearest the house. And then the Killer Instinct team is going to take the other one. So that's where they started expanding in the mid-90s. And they kept on expanding. And it does make so much sense when you know that they moved to Manor Park because of the size. Because they had five barns altogether. Every single one was utilized with maximum. And they were pretty much on top of each other. So they're like, all right, let's move to a facility where we can actually stretch out our arms and, you know, still make great games, but have a bit of breathing room, you know? So if you exit the house and turn to the west. So you turn to your left. That barn that you see there is where Donkey Kong Country was born. So you had Donkey Kong Country 1, then 2, and then the Dream Team branched off into the barn behind it. It was the first Dutch barn, so it was behind that. And the Donkey Kong Country 3 team continued working in that barn. So therefore, that's where Donkey Kong 64 was invented. So it would have been, you know, oh, we'll get this done in a year without any issue with stop and swap, you know? Oh, sure. So they would have left that barn satisfied with what they see. So that's game number one that has potential for stop and swap that we know did because, you know, the leftover remnants in that game. So they would have walked behind that barn into where the Dream Team is, which is, of course, Banjo-Kazooie. So the Banjo-Kazooie team, having finished 3 months prior, is now working on their next big game, which is Banjo-Tooie, which is the next contender for Stop and Swap. They would have gone in there, checked it out. Okay, everything's going well. Hey, there's Glitter Gulch Mine. There's the start of Witchy World, maybe. You know, just because those were the games they had just worked on with Banjo-Kazooie, going, ah, it's too tight to the end. We'll put it in the next game. So maybe they're doing something like that. They go up the steps, and that's where Dinosaur Planet is, because that's where the Diddy Kong Racing team was above the Banjo team there. So they're now working on Dinosaur Planet. Everything's going there. That's now the third team. So you got Donkey Kong, Banjo, and Dinosaur Planet. So maybe they have something to do with it there because they would have been developing that in 1998. They go, great, looks good. Let's check out the old Conker Barn. So they go down the steps. They go into the old Conker Barn. And it's not the old Conker team in here anymore. They're in the new Conker Barn, which is the barn behind this one. Who's taking seat in the Killer Instinct / Conker Barn is the Jet Force Gemini team. So that's team number four. So it's 98. They're going, we got another year on this. That's good. Everything's, you know, kicking up. Perfect. You know, maybe we got Greenwood Village in there somewhere, you know. So they exit that barn, going to the Conker Barn, where they have this little cute, sprightly looking squirrel jumping around and yelling and shouting. And they go, oh, this is completely innocent. And I'm sure nothing will ever happen to this team to make it completely change its direction and development whatsoever. So that would be game number five. And then lastly, the final barn they go to is they go, let's check out Alien Intelligence, see how they're working out, which at that point, the Blast Corps / GoldenEye / Old Audio Barn was now the Perfect Dark Barn. So that gives us game number six. And now, Heil, I will allow you to crush my dreams and go.
I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with you. I mean, there's no way to know, obviously. Because when you're trying to break down six games from the perspective of 1998, then you don't have a lot of options to choose from. Because there's only so many that were actually in development from that point in time of Banjo-Kazooie. There was Jet Force Gemini, there was Donkey Kong 64, there was Perfect Dark, there was Tooie, and then Conker, Dinosaur Planet, and then the next year would have seen Mickey Speedway USA. go into development for the N64.
Yeah. I don't know if that was yet a thing. I'm just thinking back to the press release that they would have had in 1999.
Yeah.
And they could have been doing that. Because, yeah, Jet Force Gemini could have been released and they could have immediately started on the Mickey game. But even that alone, I mean, development changes so much. There was supposed to be two Mickey games for the N64. One was a Disney racing game, and the other one was a Mickey adventure game, which was supposed to be like a platformer. And I believe you've already touched on this, so I'm already telling your audience what they know. But,
that's right.
Yeah, so I'll shut up.
Yeah, no, yeah, the Mickey platformer ultimately was not developed at Rare.
Yeah.
Because of the buyout.
And I mean, that's the least of the concerns, because then you go, Dinosaur Planet, as Snake Fighter points out, is now Star Fox, so not even on the same console. You have Conker going through an entire rebrand with it, you know, so there's a lot of things that would have really caused some rockiness if Stop and Swap even went as intended in the first place.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's just a lot of eggs in this basket, and, you know... Yeah. Anyone could get cracked and spoil the whole thing.
Exactly.
With yolky goop.
Yeah. So one interesting thing that I'd like to touch on too is that for the longest time and from the beginning, we've always thought that Banjo-Tooie was the part of Stop and Swap that was absolutely 100% there, and it was canceled during DK64. So therefore, there's leftover remnants that we found in Banjo-Tooie that were supposed to show a glimpse of Stop and Swap that were taken out just like Donkey Kong 64. But there's comments from Paul on the video as well as his Twitter that disprove that. So I can read one if you want to read the other, just the repercussions there.
Okay, why don't you read the first one?
Sure. So this is one on Paul's Q&A. He was talking about Swacko's video underneath. Somebody asked him about, you know, the future games and stuff like that. So he said the ice key and eggs were supposed to be sent to other games. Initially DK64, then Tooie, and about three others after that. Work had happened in Donkey Kong 64, and Stop and Swap was canceled shortly before that was finished. So there are some legacy Stop and Swap bits visible in DK64. Sideline, that would be the ice key, the chamber, all that kind of stuff, the golden statue. But this is the most important thing, continuing with this quote, nothing ever got into Tooie.
So I don't know how literal to take that, Steve.
That is true, whether he's talking about programming or what.
Right. And Paul's a very technically minded fella. So I could see while there might be some architecture carved out that might have facilitated Stop and Swap in 2E, you know, obviously nothing remains in the code. Nothing remains that can be extracted or exploited if you hack into it. There's nothing to find there. It doesn't mean that the developers didn't set anything aside or had gone forward with the ideas they had rattling around, you know, caveats for the future. It just means they hadn't actually gone in under the hood to make it happen in a very real sense.
Yeah, I hope you're right, because it gives me some hope that, you know, Banjo-Tooie does still have some remnants in there, and we found them mostly. You know, it's the ridiculously secret area, you know, Gruntilda's Tower Room and stuff like that. And it would make sense if that originally had a Stop and Swap purpose, and then reactive to Donkey Kong 64, they said, you know what? We have to now change our tact. We can't swap as we planned to do before, and we now have to rejig this entire thing. Ironically, though, in a funny way, Donkey Kong 64, they reacted and said, oh no, your game is coming out very soon. Strip it. Take it all out. Every little bit of it. I don't want any Stop and Swap remaining whatsoever in this game. But the Banjo-Tooie team had an exact opposite problem, which is, hey, we promised items would be in this game, so there's no connection now. I want you to put everything in this game. I know that we only planned, maybe, to put the pink egg in this one, but you're now getting the pink egg, the blue egg, the ice key, the yellow egg. Just put it into this one now. So they're frantically trying to, you know, hammer those out there. So that could have seen some change in development, where maybe they did want to go to Gruntilda's old lair or do something there and said, oh no, we got to put four of these things in now? Oh man. So I do hope you're right in that, you know, it's only code, maybe scanning software that wasn't ever put into Banjo-Tooie, as Paul says. So there is that.
The bit that you wanted me to read is from Paul's Twitter account, reacting to a tweet asking about the potential for development in 2E before it was massacred in Donkey Kong 64. And Paul said, the first thing you do when starting to develop a sequel is not work on Stop and Swap. There's a whole game to focus on. And while I do agree, obviously, I still think he could be speaking from a technical coding perspective rather than things in 2E that the artist wanted in there. And it's also hard to say because so much of what the Greg Mayle sled team liked to do was include things that had no traditional benefit to gameplay or the game structure. Now, there's a lot of things in there that are just in there to enrich the game world itself, to enhance the experience of the gameplay, which could then be misconstrued as, oh, that must be in there for this ulterior purpose. And a lot of times, it's just them world building. So it gets muddled a bit, doesn't it? Because what I really love about this team at Rare, in particular, and Greg Mayle's design ethos, which we're actually going to be discussing on an upcoming conversation, is that Greg wants you to feel things when playing one of his games. And it's not just cold, hard logic with Greg. A lot of it, I want you to have these emotions. I want you to have these human feelings in this game world. It's not just about the mechanical call and response to this electronic obstacle course. And that's done in making you believe in the game world, right? Making sure you don't have these obtrusive video game bits in a game that would prohibit you from feeling like you're in a living, breathing environment. And this philosophy trickles down to other Rare teams at the time, and I feel like the spirit of it has continued on. Obviously, with Sea of Thieves, because Greg was creative director in the early days of that game, but also now at Playtonic, you see a lot of that philosophy in things like the Yooka-Laylee games. But you have stuff like Captain Black Eye in Banjo-Tooie, and he's just sitting in this room that's decked out in Stop and Swap paraphernalia, specifically the Treasure Trove Cove bits, you know, Shark Food Island, the Pink Egg, and Captain Black Eye pretty much serves no purpose.
No. And this is, of course, after Rare had said, oh, he's got a mission and purpose all of his own in the rumor mill section of the Banjo-Kazooie site.
Right.
So, you know, yeah, it does. And again, I'm very hopeful on this. It causes my conspiracy brain to kind of go into overdrive going, oh, but there must be something. Maybe I'm taking Paul's comment at face value. And maybe on his end, the engineering bit, there wasn't a technical thing for Stop and Swap. But perhaps the team, you know, they started things in motion and then it got down to it. And they said, you know what? We just lost DK64 with it. There's no way we can do this anymore. We have to change tack. You know?
So personally, I do think Captain Black Eye was going to play a part in 2E's end for Stop and Swap. I do. And I think they had this idea early on, after Stop and Swap was conceived, and they were banning about ideas for the sequel. And I think it was probably of great romantic appeal for the team. You know, getting the chance to use this character they really liked from Dream, which they then had to cut from Kazooie. And of course, they had an affinity for him, considering they sneaked his portrait in Mad Monster Mansion in Banjo-Kazooie. And then they thought, hey, you know, here's how we could actually use Black Eye in the sequel. And even when Stop and Swap was cut a year out, they still kept him in there, and obviously dialogue would have been changed and what have you. And so just because Paul says this, it doesn't necessarily negate what they first had him earmarked for.
Can we talk about the fact that Captain Black Eye might be cursed? Because every time they've tried to put him in a game, he never comes out what they intended. Like, Dreamy comes out, they're like, he's the antagonist. They're like, nope, start over, Banjo-Kazooie. All right, we'll put him in Banjo-Tooie for Stop and Swap. Nope, that thing got canceled, take him out. Okay, well, we're going to put him in Sea of Thieves then. Nope, no sign of him yet. It came out in 2018. Like, what is going on with this pirate, man?
I spoke a little bit of it last year, but I think one of the reasons it possibly that we haven't seen Black Eye yet is Greg did move on. And like maybe Greg was like, oh, we could put Captain Black Eye in this. And then now Greg's focused on other stuff at Rare. And, you know, it's just there's no nobody really advocating to get him in there. I was like, we got Pendragon in there. Come on. Still, I hold out hope. In every time we stream the game in the Twitch little Twitch keywords, I make sure to put where is Captain Black Eye. So if anybody's searching for him, they'll join our cause. But yeah, I think the only thing cursed more than Captain Black Eye is just the timber. Timber is cursed.
True, yeah.
And the notion of a Diddy Kong Racing sequel on a larger scale. But timber has had such a rough go of it. But at least he made it in Diddy Kong Racing, you know, that's more than Captain Black Eye can say about Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah, that's true. So, yeah, on the topic of DK64, using that trophy, because it's such an outlier to consider that we have these mystery eggs and a key, and now we have a golden Donkey Kong statue that no one really reacted to online. I was kind of disappointed going like, hey, everybody's like, this is a part of Stop and Swap now. But unfortunately, it's just losers like us that are still preoccupied with it. But I thought it would have, you know, gone down more of a smash than it did. But as it stands, if we're doing every game gets a trophy, then that to me speaks to the idea of a golden cap.
These millennial games, everybody gets a trophy.
Yeah, true enough. Their participation Stop and Swap Award, you know?
Yeah, that's what that, but, just, that's what that, like, flaccid version of the ice key was to be in Tui.
Yeah. Congratulations for kinda doing Stop and Swap.
Oh, I found this not at all hidden ice chamber with a bouncing cartridge, and I had to just break it, and then it just falls on the ground. Doesn't even spin.
Yeah. Which to me as well, not to get off too topic of that, but the fact that they teased the idea that you could go behind the waterfall in Banjo-Tooie in the Banjo-Kazooie rumor mill. Because someone asked, oh, you know, what's behind the waterfall in Banjo-Kazooie? And then the team answered going, there's nothing behind the waterfall in Banjo-Kazooie. And it's like, well, that leaves the exception of Banjo-Tooie. So you could have something there. And of course there was, as we find out in the final game, one of those bouncing cartridges. But again, if you know, we're reading too literally with Paul and the team at some point, whether it's design or art or whatever, started kind of finagling stuff with that, there could have potentially been a Stop and Swap item that wasn't one of those cartridges behind, maybe another trophy. And, you know, I'm thinking the way that you get up there is grip grabbing the ledge and jumping up and going down that pathway. But if we're doing Stop and Swap where it's ice key like, there wouldn't be a way to do that. You wouldn't go up the waterfall. You just look through a cage at an item that you can't get. So who knows if you'd see, you know, a Perfect Dark statue or a Conker statue or something behind there, you know?
That's actually a good point and great rareware knowledge that you've retained in your brain. As the person who owns the URL to Rareware, I feel like I should have those bits committed to memory. But you're right, it stirred my memory banks there. I think that's actually a really plausible theory that they, because of course you're still going to have Spiral Mountain as a location in Banjo-Tooie, and so they could have earmarked even early on, like, oh, you know, what if one of the Stop and Swap items in Tooie is behind that waterfall? That would be a good place for it, a location you've already kind of been in Banjo-Kazooie that there's no way to access. That would just be like building upon the idea even more. And yeah, that could have been like to the original version of 12 Tales even. Although I think they wanted 12 Tales out before Tooie probably.
Yeah, probably.
But you could, I mean, like linear release didn't really matter in this case. So you could have had something to do with Conker or who knows, you know?
And that's, of course, just going by the logic we have now, knowing that the Donkey Kong trophy is a thing. You know, who's to say that every game had their own additional thing on top of that? Like, this is what
it has to. It has to now, Steve.
Yeah. Oh, you think it's no? It's all trophies now?
not trophies, but objects. Objects that would make sense for that game. So in this case, it probably wouldn't be anything related to Conker. It would be related to Banjo-Kazooie that you could then take into, say, Conker or another game. But I do like the idea, like the symmetry of like all the other games, like the ice key is the big item in Kazooie. The Golden Kong statue is the big, you say trophy, like it's just this trinket, but it's a relic like Indiana Jones would wiggle his fingers for.
If we want to be fair and give it a proper name, technically, it would be the Donkey Kong Golden Bust. But considering that we already have a golden bust with a lot of Donkey Kong stuff and a big golden ass for Donkey Kong, you know? Because it is just his head and a little bit of shoulders, so...
Right, it should have been his ass, if we're honest. Like, that's the most golden part of Donkey Kong.
Exactly.
I do like the symmetry, though. Like, each game would have its own lust object, effectively, where, like, you have the question mark eggs in Kazooie that are all kind of hidden away, but then you have one object that you can gaze at in each game that you can't reach until you unlock it with another game. That is just the most tantalizing. That would really... See, here's what Rare is doing. Here's what's so brilliant about this in a very evil sort of late-stage capitalism sort of sense. Because,
good old FOMO, eh?
Yeah, because Rare, you know, what they do is they train us. They wean a generation to be completionist by saying, well, you've got to get everything in our games. You know, every last music note, every last banana. And now you've got to get every last game we released on the system to get everything as well. It's devious. Just ingenious.
It is. And the fact the ice key goes through them all, you have to get them all now. So in an era where Pokemon was kicking off and being a big thing where you had to have both games, I can see myself going rabid going, well, I got to get Perfect Dark. I got to get the ice key in that one so I can unlock something and conquer, you know?
So the ice key was going to go into all of them, just to be clear.
Yeah, as far as I know, yeah. Like, they had, at one point, actually, there was 7 eggs. There was no ice key, it was just 7 eggs. And it was during the development of Donkey Kong 64, they said, well, hold on, we've got a nice level here with Freezy's Peak, and we got a nice level here with Crystal Caves. There should be something, like that attaches those two together that's a big item, you know? Like, it's different from all the other eggs, because it's the one super secret bonus. That's how they looked at it. And they said, well, looking at a lock and key metaphor that we see in the patent there for Stop and Swap, they go, well, if we had a locked door in Donkey Kong, and we have a key in Banjo-Kazooie, I mean, that's logic. That works. That you'd want to get that key in Banjo, and you'd want to open that door in Donkey Kong. So if you could somehow give that key to Donkey Kong, you unlock the door. So it was as simple as that. And then that's when Paul was saying it's the one item that gets passed beyond. And even in the quotes he was talking about, you know, he says it goes from Banjo to Donkey Kong, then to Tooie, and then 3 other games after that. So that was the big plan for the ice key. It was unlike anything else. Like, the eggs were just going to go to their games they were intended to be delivered to. They would hatch. You would get the item that was meant for it, and you go, cool, I've just stopped and swapped with that, and that's great. But the ice key was that one level up feature where it's like, and actually, speaking of cruelty and kind of evil with Rare, we were all told on the advent of Banjo-Kazooie that, hey, you've 100%ed the game, that's fantastic, here's some sneaky little risque Polaroids of Mumbo showing you off these locations in different games, and you have to wait for Banjo-Tooie to get these, right? It could be that you get Banjo-Tooie, and then you go, wait, I have Banjo-Tooie, I have Banjo-Kazooie, but I cannot get the ice key with these two games. I need Donkey Kong 64 to set the events in motion that I can actually get the key to pass to DK to then pass to Banjo-Tooie. So that's where that could have fit in if they were being especially evil.
I think I know what the ice key would have done in Conker.
What's that?
Because all of the Rare characters would have handled it before it got to Conker. You know, Lanky Kong sneezes on the ice key. And from there, it carries this virus, this funny face flu that's preserved because the key is so cold, right? And Barry, it transmits to Barry. The funny face flu jumps from Lanky Kong, who's basically immune to it, but he's a carrier, you know, and it jumps to Barry. And to chipmunks, the funny face flu is lethal. And this is how Barry would have died in the original 12 Tales Conquer 64. The original canon in the world that Stop and Stop still would have existed in. Lanky Kong would have infected Barry with the ice key.
Yeah, this isn't even speculation. This is fact. You've solved it. But should we briefly go over like how our perspective has changed as we've learned more and more about Stop and Swap, just to kind of tie this up in a nice bow, and then we can talk about our final thoughts and What's next?
Yeah, Steve, you just tell me what we're talking about and I'll talk about it.
All right. So the evolution of stop and swap, as we understand it, it's started off as something so small and it's ballooned and blossomed. And again, it's no longer a rabbit hole. It's an anthill that just spirals off. So here's what we knew at the time and what we know now, the linearity of it. So at the end of Banjo-Kazooie, we were told, look, there's three secret items. There's a pink egg, a blue egg, and an ice key. And that's somehow linked to Banjo-Tooie. We're not going to tell you too much. So the release of Banjo-Tooie comes out. There's no connection. But we have the pink egg, the blue egg, the ice key, and then, for some reason, a yellow egg. They're all found in Tooie. There's no connection to Tooie at all. They're just all in the game for some reason. And we left it off there, because we went, okay, these are fake items or whatever. But, you know, this is the three items as we were promised, and here they are. Then we find the sandcastle codes. And we go, hold on. We have a red egg, a green egg, a cyan egg, and there's that yellow egg, so that all makes sense. And they're all for Banjo-Tooie. So, oh my god, if we could find some way to transfer these over to Banjo-Tooie, we'd unlock even more mystery stuff than what we got in the final game. And then, of course, there's discovery of the ice key in Donkey Kong 64, and we go, okay, somehow Donkey Kong's involved in this too, as a weird ice key thing. That's weird, but it's mostly for Banjo-Tooie. And then, of course, we have Paul Makachek come through with Rare Replay as well, because they talked about it there. And we're going, hold on, Stop and Swap's supposed to involve six total Rare games, each one getting a mystery egg, with an ice key serving as the super code to link them all together. Then we have the Donkey Kong statue discovery, which complicates it even more, because we go, okay, hold on, we have six games here with the eggs and the key, and now we have a golden trophy that are traded somehow between these games, but it all links to Kazooie. Like, Kazooie gives one egg to each one, the ice key passes, and I don't know, maybe Donkey Kong just has a golden statue for completing Stop and Swap, and that's the reward that you're supposed to get for that game. And now, finally, here we are right now. Swacko has his Stop and Swap video, or Scowo rather, and then the Retro Hour podcast reveals that Stop and Swap involves six games where six mystery eggs and an ice key and a golden Donkey Kong trophy are meant to be all interconnected in a massive linking spider web that had every game trading up, down, sideways, across, upside down, forever. And, it, you know, that's just what we know now. Imagine what we're going to know tomorrow.
I think we pretty much tapped it out. Like, I don't know how we could. Here's the only thing I could think plausibly we could decipher, because I feel like Paul Makachek is tapped out as an information source at this point. I would love to have Paul on the show. I don't think I'm gonna like tickle any more info out of him.
Well, and to be fair, I do think he's kind of gone. Look. It's done. I've explained all I know. Why are you people still talking about it? Yeah. I don't know if he realizes, like, just how important it is to us that we grew up with this stuff when we love it so much. But he's like, guys, I got nothing else. I've told you everything. Please try to move on. We're like, no.
And unfortunately, the frailty of the human memory, as time goes on, like, details will become cloudier.
Yeah. And to be fair, like, the information we got from him is amazing after 25 years. I would have forgot about it a week after it happened. But as you say, with Paul, there is still people that worked at Rare that did work on these games. Like, we potentially have an artist that worked on the Donkey Kong trophy that still, you know, remembers that and just doesn't know that we're looking for it. So
no, that's
they
true.
Might come through.
It's like a cartridge seeking code.
Exactly. Still scanning it, yeah. Or Greg Mayles could even leak a document that shows the original Spiral Mountain in Banjo-Tooie and goes, oh, look behind the waterfall. This has a label that says Conquer Trophy, you know?
I suppose you're correct. You know, this sort of thing happens all the time. It happened just a few months ago. You know, Ed Bryan shared on social media these pages when he was just like, hey, here's some fun little doodles I did on some papers from Rare of concepts for the Banjo-Kazooie box art. Just fun little doodles, check them out, internet. That was his intent. What he didn't realize was that he doodled on the pages that detailed Rare's early plans for E3 that year, which then revealed the existence to us of a Diddy Kong racing game for the Game Boy Color, and the early concept for Dinosaur Planet, Dino Island, when it was starring Timber. Still, the aforementioned bad luck Timber. So this kind of thing does happen, where the creatives who were there, whether they're still at Rare today, or they're at Playtonic, or they're now doing their own independent ventures, they don't realize the full history that's already been revealed to fans, nor do they realize what we still don't know. Or they don't realize that anyone actually cares about this. So Ed Brian thought the big story was his sketching, his doodles, but it was the newfound clarity behind the concept of a Diddy Kong Racing GBC game, and the original concept behind Dinosaur Planet as a more direct spin-off to Diddy Kong Racing. And then that becomes a big news cycle for freaks like DK Vine and Rare Gamer, not the same site. You're right, I mean, you're absolutely right. We shouldn't say there's nothing left to discuss, because as we've learned from just recent history, there often is. And honestly, there's info we all individually learn in our own research and talking with sources that doesn't even get put out in the public light because maybe we're asked not to share it. We might have the individual pieces of Stop and Swap between the two of us even, but we're just being withholding. I mean, maybe the big Rare news sites out there, you, me, Amir, we all just need to come together and compare notes. But I think that Paul is probably drained as a source. He's been very upfront and forthcoming and probably has nothing left to give as far as Stop and Swap goes. But I'm sure there's still juicy Mr. Pants info.
Oh yeah, it's Mr. Pants. That's forever. He could, you know, he could talk about us to that till we're bored of it and we're going, Paul, move on. He's treating it exactly like Stop and Swap is, you know?
When I do get him on the show, it's probably going to be to discuss It's Mr. Pants, Donkey Kong Land, Donkey Kong Virtual Boy. With Stop and Swap, I'd be like, look, I've got nothing left to add and I won't do this to you. I will say, though, that the only thing that I can think of that we could plausibly find out without anyone who was at Rare revealing it, either deliberately or accidentally, you know, if they give us any further details, like if they find notes in an old shoebox where they detail the plans for Lanky Kong to infect Barry with the funny face flu, the only thing we could find out independently still is if your theory is correct and Jet Force Gemini was indeed part of this. Because I dismissed it back when we discussed it previously, because there was no way. Not with what we found out about when Stop and Swap is canned. Not when we found out that Donkey Kong 64 was what tipped Nintendo off, and then they scrapped it in early October 1999. But if you're correct, and Jet Force is part of it, and just escaped Nintendo's purview. Because Jet Force, that was a Rare published game, correct?
Yeah, it was, yeah. By themselves.
And sure, Nintendo still had a hand in propping it up, just like they did with all of Rare's self-published games in those days. It was more of a vanity label for Rare, but there was still some Nintendo money behind it. You know, it was just kind of like a gift given to Rare due to their massive success. But I think there was probably less scrutiny with Jet Force Gemini. Not as much capital being invested in that game. Not as many cartridges getting produced, I think. So you could be potentially onto something, Steve. But I think it would require there actually being a Stop and Swap item hiding in Jet Force Gemini still today that nobody has ever found. Now, here's what I posit to you. If our theory was that there was going to be a big ticket item in every game, if that is correct, a la the Golden Donkey Kong bust, the Golden Kong relic, the DK statue, the trophy, if you will.
It's just like the fridge and the freezer in his treehouse. It's got thousands of names.
Yes. If that's the case, then there must be an equivalent somewhere in Jet Force Gemini. Is there any item in there, any place that it could be hidden and remain undetected for 25 years if it wasn't removed? And it shouldn't have been removed, not if they removed Stop and Swap in early October 1999. Could it be hiding in plain sight? Something that could then have been swapped into Donkey Kong 64, or Banjo-Tooie, or 12 Tales, or Dino Island.
There's nothing coming to my mind, but are you teasing something that you know that I don't?
Why the hell would I know anything about Jet Force Gemini, Steve? It's not DKU.
Just the way you said it, you're like, do you know what I'm...
No, I'm just putting the theory out there so we can properly investigate and do a fifth episode in the future. This is me holding out a Polaroid. It just hasn't developed yet.
Well, the thing is, too, with this entire thing... When we started this stop and swap conversation way back in the day, our very first episode, we literally thought we knew everything there was about stop and swap. Like, this was just a, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we kind of touched on this amazing feature and just offered a retrospective for the fans, because it'd be kind of interesting to talk about how it was involved. And now we're on episode 4. Like, you know, new news keeps on coming out. And like, a lot of it, as we know now, has been in the past 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, like, this feature was dead in 2000, right? 1999, 2000, technically. But, like, how much stuff is coming out in 2019, you know? This shouldn't be happening, but it does. Like, it's amazing. So, you know, as far as people data mining and looking further, hey, maybe you're right. Maybe Jet Force Gemini, someone's going to pop up and go, hey, I just realized it was looking for this code from Donkey Kong, so I put it in my emulator, and guess what? It just popped up in, like, in Mizar's palace in the pyramid. We just see this, like, golden statue pop up of Tricky from Dinosaur Planet. And now I'm going to hack that game because that game's been leaked. And oh my god, there's something in that game too. Look at this. It's a Banjo-Tooie statue. Oh my god, I just found out that Banjo-Tooie was looking for this had it not been scrapped. Like, there's so much that could still be out there, you know, to keep it interesting.
This is the fan fiction that Steve writes, by the way.
And your Lanky Kong snot ice key was not?
That was just a valid theory. Just a shot in the dark.
Oh, of course.
But what would it do for me? Like, what would this do for my psyche if someone, I don't know, puts in their own code in Jet Force Gemini, and we find out that behind a wall somewhere, behind a door that's never been opened before, just out pops, I'm Tricky or something. You know, the Tricky from Diddy Kong Racing. Does that mean that Tricky is technically in Jet Force Gemini, even if you can't access him legitimately? Would that make Jet Force DKU, even if you can't actually get to him by legitimately playing the game? What a great philosophical question that would be.
Yeah, true, eh? Yeah, that would, it's got a lot of repercussions.
What a quandary that would be, and I would welcome the challenge. I love little mental puzzles like that. But, yeah, in the live stream, The Snake Fighter 64 says, it's too bad Killer Instinct Gold was too late to be part of this. Yeah, it's a shame that, as Paul said, Diddy Kong Racing had already shipped, because Diddy Kong Racing is the most logical start of it. If we're talking about this, like, spider web, I've likened it to a daisy chain before, of Rare games and this Rare shared universe, which is what Diddy Kong Racing effectively established. Diddy Kong Racing as sort of the hub, as the nexus of all of it, that would make more sense than Banjo-Kazooie being the first one. But yeah, like, you go back and you're like, oh, it's a shame Killer Instinct Gold or Blast Corps couldn't have been included.
GoldenEye,
that would be like, well, I'm sure the rights holders to Bond, the Broccolis and what have you, would have, like, frowned upon. I'm amazed they got DK mode in there.
Yeah, true enough, eh?
They're so precious when it comes to Bond, and the only reason we got Bond back on, I mean, this Bond, Pierce Brosnan Bond, GoldenEye Bond, the only reason we got GoldenEye back on the Switch and the Xbox is because Daniel Craig died. His James Bond died.
In the movie.
Spoiler. I don't care. It's old now. I'm sorry. They're casting a new Bond now. It's probably going to be that one guy. So, like, you can only release... This is like a rule. Unless there's a specific allowance, you can only release past Bond media, re-release it, or use the likeness of an old Bond in the inter-Bond period of between films. Like, the From Russia with Love game starring Sean Connery, technically after Brosnan had bowed out.
Are you saying, then, that they're going to stop using the Bond that they have and they're going to swap it with another?
Ah, I see. Wordplay. Anyway, that's our whole rationale why GoldenEye probably wouldn't be included in Stop and Swap if they thought of it earlier. But they got DK mode in there, so who knows? It's rare. They probably would have hidden something in there, and then Eon Productions and the Broccoli's would have been like, no, you have to take out Stop and Swap. You can't have that in there because James Bond is pure. You can't spread his STIs.
I'm sure that'll be the next facts that Paul Makachek uploads.
But yeah, I think Diddy Kong Racing. You know, when I look at my regrets for Stop and Swap, Diddy Kong Racing not being a part of it seems like the most obvious one in hindsight, because it really could have kicked it off in a way that would have made more sense than Banjo-Kazooie. But it's all moot, considering it never got off the ground to begin with. But you, Steve, you actually think that the refrigerator in the workers' quarters in Banjo-Tooie's Witchy World, with all of the refrigerator magnets on it, you think that could actually be something of a stop-and-swap Rosetta Stone, right?
Yeah, and if Paul is correct in saying that there's nothing left, then this might even just be a tribute. But I do find it odd that if you go into Grunny Industries, you go into the workers' quarters, you find a fridge next to a mirror, and on this fridge, for those that don't know, is a bunch of fridge magnets for the various rare games that were being developed at that time. So at the very top, you've got the PD logo for Perfect Dark. You've got DK right next to it on the right for DK. You've got BT, that's Banjo-Tooie underneath Perfect Dark. And then right on the side, underneath DK and right beside BT, is the Jet Force Gemini logo. And as well, they got a portrait or a big poster of Vila hanging up on the wall as well. So, you know, could this be part of it? Could this allude to it going like, these are all the games that we had planned before, you know, the rug was pulled out? Or it could just be innocuous. But I think looking at the things that we have found in Banjo-Tooie, like, this could be a hint of a greater plan that unfortunately never came to be. And this is kind of their tribute of it, you know?
And look, if there was a freezer, I'm sorry, freezer, I know you're in a live stream chat. I keep saying freezer, but I'm not calling you out. I'm just talking about the freezer that would have kept the ice key cold in Donkey Kong's treehouse in Donkey Kong 64. Obviously. Now, if there was a freezer plant, hey, well, this is a refrigerator planned to be in the workers' quarters in Tooie with a bunch of logos of Rare's N64 games on it. Maybe this would have been some sort of device that you would have gone to as a stop-and-swap transport hub from Tooie. Now, they did take off the DK logo, unfortunately, in the XBLA version and replaced it, swapped it with a BK logo. Rare's gotten a little bit craftier in the modern day with still referencing Donkey Kong stuff on their side of the DKU, doing it in a legally correct or ambiguous way. But some of the more blatant stuff that was in Tooie, owing to the fact that it was a Nintendo-published game back in the day, it had to be altered when they did the XBLA version. So they also like slightly changed the plush Donkey Kong that Bottle's Child was holding. They made it look more like a chimp as well. They also did some other stuff. Did they remove the reference to Mario?
I'm not sure, because you're talking about Logo saying that Italian gentleman, right?
Well, in the original, he actually name drops Mario.
Oh, they call him an Italian gentleman in this one. Yeah, because I'm like, what did they change that to? So, yeah, they have censored that one too. I do have to say, though, with Banjo-Tooie, when it does eventually come on the Switch, there's going to be a whole new generation of kids that are disappointed with Stop and Swap. So we might, you know, have another episode then when, you know, maybe some Rare developer will speak out and go, I know you're disappointed. Here was what the original plan was. So, you know, it could be when Tooie comes to Switch that we do eventually see that.
Yeah, I've heard people hypothesize, oh, do you think they'll make Stop and Swap work? And no, I don't. I'm not suggesting that. But people do point out that you could do it with Nintendo Switch Online. And I'm like, look, you know, NSO is run by a skeleton crew as it is. And nobody at Rare is going to go in and put in the significant work required to implement Stop and Swap in 25-year-old games when this is a straight-up emulation job. Already tricky, given the way Rare coded these games. It's a bare minimum situation. I mean, hell, you couldn't even swap the characters from Mario Golf GBC to Mario Golf N64, which is a feature that does work on the cartridges with With the memory pack.
Oh yeah, right. Or Pokemon Stadium, they had that issue there too.
Yeah, know? And it would be, you would think it would be relatively a couple extra steps, relatively easy to do. It's on the same software, like they're, but they can't talk to each other. Okay, whatever.
With them, yeah, 4J Studios, yes, but Nintendo, no, because they'll emulate it directly from the source, and it's going to be what it is, you know.
Yeah, and I just want the original Banjo-Tooie on Nintendo Switch Online plus expansion pack, because I feel like even more than Banjo-Kazooie 64 compared to XBLA, it's just different enough. And yeah, you've got like the music syncing and stuff that people have a problem with in the XBLA version, but I honestly just want it because it's a game that I would like to revisit. Like the N64 version, completely removed from my in the era disappointment that I couldn't go back to Kazooie. And it would be fun right. to just relive it with all of my disappointments firmly in the past. And I say that acknowledging that we're at the end of our fourth Stop and Swap episode in since 2019. And we only have two more to go until we have six entities ourselves, and they can then talk to each other, and you can take little bits of dialogue from one episode and put them in the next, and then that will get you all sorts of bonus goodies.
And then we gotta plan a seventh episode and fucking cancel it.
Is that the end? Are you done?
This has been a File 2 production.
Kerikoo.